I'm introducing Edward Averill, his wife Shirley, from Hastings. And this is on behalf of the Hawke's Bay Knowledge Bank, 11th of January 2017. Good morning, Ted, and I'd like you to tell us all about your side of the Averill family from when they first arrived and moved into Hawke's Bay. Thank you.
Eachells. This property was originally 1,690 acres and was purchased from Mr. Hector Smith by Edward Averill in March 1916. Prior to this, Edward Averill had been farming two properties in the Denderberg district after relinquishing the management of Mangatoroto Station. He arrived in New Zealand about 1880 after having served a period with Lloyds Bank in Staffordshire, England. He joined the staff of the Bank of New Zealand at Woodville on arrival in New Zealand, and after a short time was sent to Matamata Station in the Waikato, which was then owned by the New Zealand Assets Board, brackets Bank of New Zealand. Matamata was originally owned by the Firth family, but owing to bad times, they were unable to meet their commitments at the bank. His first job at Matamata was evidently in the role of bookkeeping, but later was put in charge of the 80 or so plough teams, which proved to be valuable training for the future years. A great deal of breaking in of the country was taking in at this time, as much as 5,000 acres being sown in Swedes and a further 1,000 acres in annually oats. A lot of this teamwork was done by contract. Matamata at this stage was about 120,000 acres and was supervised by John McCaw. E. Averill was eventually put in charge of the OKOROIRE block, which was about 30,000 acres. About 1901, he was sent by the Assets Board to manage Mangaratoro Station in Denderberg, about 30,000 acres. This station was originally taken over from the Maoris by Captain Hamilton, who descended from an ancestry who had helped to make the Scottish history. Hamilton, like the Firths at the Matamata, could not meet his obligations to the bank and so lost the property in the course of a few years. 1902, the Assets Board subdivided a big portion of Mangatoto into small farms. The homestead block, which was left with about 3,500 acres, was bought by the Knight brothers, who appointed E. Averill as manager. In 1909, he gave up the management of the farm to farm the two properties mentioned before on his own account. In 1914, an old station, now known as Oldergan Wanakino Stations, totalling 14,000 acres, was managed by R.B. Humphreys. The latter, about this time, had made arrangements on taking over the management to be allowed to purchase 1,690 acres of the station for himself. However, he died prior to being able to stock it, which left the Smith brothers in a bit of a quandary. On the recommendation of the late Mr. Jack Blaine, E. Averill was appointed manager of Ulrich with the conditions of the right to purchase land when he took up management. Eachells is the name of the farm at King's Bromley, Staffordshire, England, which was farmed by the Averill family for many years. After the disposal of the Denderberg properties that E. Averill owned, the sheep from this district were brought to Eachells by his sons C.G. Averill and L.R. Averill, being railed from Denderberg to Waipawa and then driven overland through Argyle, Tikakinu and Kerru. These sheep, being well into the Lincoln breed and on better land down there, did not do so well at Eachells. Eachells had all been ploughed, cropped and grassed prior to purchase. In May 1924, a further 90 and a half acres were purchased from H.J. Smith at £7 per acre. This was part of the paddock called the Upper Horse Paddock, Wanakina Station part of it. In March 1928, a further 85 and three-quarter acres were purchased from Mr. Smith at £8 per acre. This consisted of the paddocks known as the Wedge and the Rileys. In August 1929, 14 and a half acres were purchased from Mr. Smith, being part of the Williams Hill Wanakina Station block. This land, which was purchased for £7 an acre, resulted in putting the boundary on a much better line. The property now consisted of 1,882 acres, and the total cost was approximately £15,700. In 1931, when the disastrous worldwide slump set in, which lasted for several years, it was agreed by Mr. Smith to make an adjustment to the interest charges. During the slump, the mortgages relief that was set up by the government, which allowed people to apply to the court when arrangements could not be made privately concerning the payments of interest, rent, etc. And the following will give some indication of prices received for stock during the slump. In June 1930, 49 yearling steers and 53 yearling heifers and 187 five-year ewes realised £317. In December, 40 bales of wool, 46 bales of wool, £337. In 1931, one fat heifer and one bullock realised £6.03. And then brackets, surely a mistake. In 1932, 134 five-year ewes realised £58.12. 87 ewes at Stortford Lodge, £28.01. October 32, two bullocks, 22 cows, £121.03. And March 1933, 213 five-year ewes, £90.10. April, six fat steers, £39.14. In 1931, the loss on the farming of the property amounted to £915. In 1932, the loss amounted to £435. In 1935, prices had started to improve. In June 1935, 67 inland five-year ewes made £75. August, 39 fat ewes, £28. March, 27 steers, £212. February, 17 fat lambs, 16 shillings each, 100 wethers, £1 each. In 1924-25, Ulrich Station, which had been run as a partnership up until this date, had been managed by E. Averill. The trustees of the late C. A. Smith and Mr. Hector Smith at this time decided to dissolve the partnership and run each of their respective properties separately. One of the reasons I suspect that because Ned Nelson Smith, was coming of age and he was going to inherit his share of the estate, which happened to be Ulrich Station as it turned out. The trustees retained the name of Ulrich and Mr. Hector Smith's property was called Wanakino. In 1926, E. Averill took a trip to Europe, his only trip back to his old country, returning the following year to finally settle at Eachells. The latter property, until this date, had been run by C.G. Averill and L.R. Averill and M.P. Averill, his three sons, under the supervision of E. Averill. At this stage, L.R. Averill was appointed manager of Wanakino Station and the late Alec McKenzie was appointed manager of Ulrich. L.R. Averill remained at Wanakino Station as manager until 1938 and then went to Mariakākahō to farm the cottage block, as it was known. This was owned by Mrs. Fountain, who was the daughter of Sir R.D.D. McLean. She lived in England and had been married to Admiral Fountain. In 1921, C.G. Averill took over the present property known as Woodgate, which he farmed for many years, finally taken over by his son Edward. Woodgate was named after a property farmed by the Averill family for 300 years at King's Bromley, Staffordshire, England, and separated by about a mile from the Eachell farm previously mentioned in England. Woodgate was originally part of a settlement after the 1418 War, and Cecil Averill added 120 acres to that and a purchase from Mr. Smith at a later date. Edward passed away in June at the age of 82, the property being left in equal shares to the three sons, which they farmed in partnership until 1960. The property was then surveyed into three blocks, Mr. M.P. Averill retaining the homestead block of 679 acres, L.R. Averill retaining the sugar pots and Kerry blocks, totalling 596 acres. C.G. Averill took over the paddocks called Wanakino Triangle and the squares totalling 608 acres. The square was never part of the original Ulrich Station, being purchased by the Smith Bros from the then owners of Kerry Station, who found it awkward to work being cut off from the farm for the rest of the station. C.G. Averill's portion of Eachells was taken over by his son George and Charles, his brother, also having an interest in it. This farm is called Merlindale. To get access to this property, a small block of country was purchased from Kerry Station, on which George built his present home, and a cutting and bridge had to be put across the Wanakino Gorge, which was quite a formidable job. Mr. M.P. Averill and L.R. Averill continued the farm in partnership. After Rochie Averill went to Mariakākahō, the management of Wanakino was taken over by Ian Smith, the only son of Hector Smith. He continued to farm there and became very friendly with my mother and father, Cecil and Zilla. When the war started, he decided he'd have to go away to the war, and he asked my father, Cecil, if he would take over the management of Wanakino on a short-term basis until something else was found. He went away to the war and got killed in action, and Dad stayed on. Cecil stayed on farming Wanakino until 1946, when he had to go back to his own farm. So he suggested to Mr. Smith that his son-in-law, Moore Renton, who was manager of Dalgetty's in Nelson, should come up and have a look and see if he felt like taking it over. This was duly done, and Moore Renton came up and had a look around and decided, okay, it was on, and he and Rachel moved up and took over Wanakino. And Dad went back to running Woodgate. The other Averill son that hasn't been mentioned and didn't farm was Eric. He was the eldest. He went to England on a trip at the beginning of the 1418 war and stayed with a bachelor uncle at Worthing. One day the uncle received a letter from him saying he'd disappeared, that he was on the Western Front, and gave him a bit of a shock. Well, in 1917 he was offered a commission with a Gurkha regiment in India and decided to take that and get out of the hellhole, and went to India and was killed in a riot there in 1921. He's buried in India, and that's all the only part he takes in the story. Two men came out from England, Averill cousins. It would be difficult to find two men so unlike in physique and character as these men were. That is emphasised by the contrasting nature of their callings, for Edward was a banker, Walter a churchman. Edward died so closely resembling a recluse that it would be splitting hairs to attempt to deny it. Walter wrote his biography shortly before his death, so the life of one is a closed book, that of the other an open book, thereby simplifying the task of my review. Edward was cautious and uncommunicative. Walter was gregarious, a man of the people, an extrovert. Edward was none of these things. The paths of the cousins did not cross frequently. As men and citizens, they were poles apart. Edward was lean and spare of figure, according to one of his daughter-in-laws, thin as a rake all his life. Walter was a man of all-round better physique. He was a round of feature and genial. At Varsity, Walter had rowed with distinction, whereas Edward's chief form of relaxation seemed to be walking. He would have made a good harrier. Edward was not a Varsity man. Walter, on the other hand, was a man of God. He rose to the rank of Archbishop in the Anglican Church. Edward spent most of his life managing farming property. He owned land and farmed it on his own account. He had an impressive record in public life. Edward Averill took a interest in local affairs. He is one of the prime movers in the formation of the Dannyburgh A&P Association and served a time as president. He was chairman of the Howard Estate Board, a member of the Hawke's Bay Rabbit Board, a director of the Hawke's Bay Farmers Corporation, on the committee of the Hawke's Bay A&P Society, and was assessor on the Land Management Court. He was also on the Land Board, which was formed in 1913. The following people were on the Land Board: Pope, Berry, Buckley, Dingle, Hunt, Orbel, Mackenzie, Hogan, Alport, Hall, Wilson, Massey, Prime Minister, Grigg, Reynolds and E. Averill. When Cecil and Zilla Averill retired from Woodgate, their eldest son Ted, who had married Shirley Deneen, took over the property in 1961. We farmed there until 1993. We had three children, two sons and a daughter. Eldest son Simon, second son Stephen, and last daughter Caroline. Cecil drew Woodgate in the ballot and moved from Eachells, and a house was built in 1936, and him and Zilla moved into that house and farmed Woodgate. They had quite a lot of children. They had Anne first, the girl, and then Joan, and then Ted, and then George, and then Charles, and then Mary. Anne was killed tragically in the Napier earthquake at the Napier Hospital before Ted was even born, aged five. Ted, probably to his disadvantage, left school and farmed with his father till he took over. He probably should have gone and farmed somewhere else for a while, worked somewhere else for a while. George took occasional employment at other farms and then took over Merlindale at the back of Cecil's share of Eachells. And Charles was in partnership with me as far as ownership went. And he farmed in Gisborne when he married. The boys went to Heriworth and then Nelson College. It's interesting that both Cecil and Ted and Shirley's two boys went to Nelson.
Why don't you go to Nelson? It's not a great school.
Shut up, we beat you at football.
Not this year, 2016. Christ won it.
They still have that intercollegiate, do they?
Where was your luggage?
Well, the Nelson boys at my day, and there was a big contingent from Gisborne, came down on the steam trains through to Wellington and then on the overnight ferry across to Nelson direct. There were two old ships, the Martangi and the Arahura. The Arahura was an old wool ship, and one memorable time it was at the wharf, and a man was going along with a hammer banging the plates like they do on railway wagons, and suddenly his hammer went through. However, that was quickly patched up. She was a great old sailing ship, though. She went through some good storms. But they had to stop in French Pass, which was sheltered water, to pick up the Weber boys, whose father farmed in French Pass. And they came out by boat alongside the ship. Their luggage was pulled up by a rope, and they climbed a rope ladder. And the ship could stay stationary only for 20 minutes because of rip tides. And then it had to move. So you'd wake up in the night and hear this bang, 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 bang as the Weber boys climbed up, and then the engines would rumble and be on our way again. Quite interesting. And we pulled into Nelson Port one morning rather early, and there was a cutter, coastal cutter, tied up along the wall. And we were thinking as we're coming in, we're moving quite fast here. And we continued to move quite fast and gave the cutter a damn good bang, which got a rather raucous and voluble remark from the fellow who came out of the cabin.
So, I mean, how many years were you at Nelson College?
Three. Simon and Stephen went. We went down there a lot. We loved Nelson. It's quite an interesting place. Out in the country in Mutuaca and places like that, they've got a glass works and they've got antique shops and things that you just don't see anywhere else. And I asked a woman in an antique shop, it was actually a second-hand shop, but it was an antique shop in my opinion. And I said, where do you get all this wonderful stuff from? And she said, a lot of English people come out and retire in Nelson and die. And she said, we get the stuff, and that's why they've got such good quality. But we like Nelson. And up all the little valleys are potters and pot smoking God knows what. It's really quite interesting.
Thank you, Ted and Shirley. Thank you for an interesting talk from you, Ted, and on behalf of the Hawke's Bay Knowledge Bank, thank you once again.